live from our top secret broadcasting bunker. I had to turn the recorder button on because I forgot to do it. And now I'm looking for a video clip that I just made. Hang on, uno momento, por favor. If you'll pardon my French. Here it is. Good to be with you today. I hope you're having a wonderful day. I am. Had a good study today. I'm going to show you what I've been studying, what I've been up to today, what I've been studying. Got a prayer request from our good friend, Brother Tim Behrens, who, as you know, if you lived in the St. Louis area, you know that Tim and Al Gross, they did a morning drive time show in Los Angeles, California, for a station, KBTR, and it was a Crawford broadcasting station. It was a Christian radio station. And they did the morning drive program from like 6 to 10 a.m. in the morning. And those guys were so good. They were voted the number one talk show of any station anywhere in the Los Angeles area, including, you know, the secular news broadcasting stations, and they have talk shows and things like that, including morning drive time shows where you'll have a couple DJs and they'll either play country music or rock music or, you know, hip hop or whatever it was. They beat everybody out. And then Don Crawford bought the old KXOK. I think it's what it was. Let's see here. Yeah, the KXOK, which was an AM rock and roll station, bought that out and converted it, called it KJSL. And I think it probably stands for King Jesus in St. Louis. But they became immensely popular here. And no wonder, they were good. And I used to listen to them every morning. If I'd get up, I'd turn the radio on, listen to Tim and Al. And then on the way into the church, driving to the church, I'd listen to Tim and Al. And then when I got here, I would turn the radio on and listen to Tim and Al. I don't remember the first time we met, I invited them to our church because they used to have an open invitation. They say, if you want us to come speak at your church, we will. So I had them come. And met them then, and then we developed a relationship, both Tim and Al and myself. And sometimes when Tim was going to be gone or was sick or something like that, then Al asked me to fill in for him. And my first time doing live broadcasting, it went very well. But I learned a lot from those guys. And so, but Tim, when he left KJSL, he moved to Las Vegas, Nevada for the specific reason of giving out 300 gospel tracts a day, every day. That was his goal. And if you know anything about the Vegas Strip, and the Vegas strippies, in order to get people across the street, because the street was constantly busy, had cars up and down, it was the city that never slept. And you could be out there at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, traffic still moving down, up and down the streets, people still there, going to shows, gambling, whatever. So they had these crossover bridges that went from one side of the strip to the other. And Tim would stand on these crossover bridges and hand out gospel tracts. And he just had a way of presenting himself to them. He witnessed to Penn Jillette of Penn and Teller, the Magic Group, who's a libertarian, but he's an atheist. And here's what Penn Jillette told Tim Behrens one time, and I'm going to paraphrase it because I don't remember the exact words. But Tim asked him, you know, do you believe in God? No. Do you believe in Jesus Christ? Do you believe he existed? Do you believe in heaven and hell? And Penn Jillette, after talking with Tim for a while, said this. He said, "Tim, I respect what you're doing, and I like what you're doing." And he said, "I'll tell you why." He said, if what you're saying was actually true, that there's a God in heaven, and he created all of us, and he invites all of us to come and live with him in heaven for all of eternity, and those who don't, because they love sin so much, that because of that sin, they are doomed to hell for all of eternity. He said, how bad would you have to hate somebody that you wouldn't tell them and at least try to warn them about this place called hell? In other words, if you don't tell people about and warn them about hell, that is a sign to this lost atheist libertarian master showman. Great magician these guys are. You would have to hate people immensely in order to not warn them about the possibility of them going to hell. Outstanding words from a lost man. And I'll be honest with you. I have heard some lost people say things about Christianity that floored me, because I knew they were dead right. Absolutely right. And it's a shame they're lost. But anyway, he just sent me a text. He said, "Pastor Mike, please pray for me as I am going back to Vegas in 48 hours. Hope to be there for about a week to give out 10,000 copies of the chick track called The Mad Machine." And you can go to www.chick.com. Now, be careful that you don't Google search for chicks. Okay? Don't do that. That would not be good. But chick.com, it's Chick, Jack Chick. Actually, Jack Chick, Guinness Book of World Records for being the largest comic book distributor in the world. Jack Chick. Well, he's going on to be with the Lord now. And so he's asking us to pray for him. And if I get an update from him when he's going to South America, I will certainly let you know. What I'm going to do is I've compiled a video, and I'm just going to play this in the background. Some of these are from, you see the logo there at the bottom. There's a YouTube channel that I subscribe to called Secure Team 10. And they're a pretty good channel. They have usually a lot of really good UFO pictures or UFO videos. the guy who runs it, Tyler, got sick for about a year. And I thought maybe he died or something happened to him, you know, whatever. But apparently he was very, 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 very sick and he had to go off the air for a year. But he's got over 1 million subscribers to his channel. He was showing the little plaque that he gets from YouTube for reaching 1 million subscriptions on his YouTube channel. So a lot of these videos come from his channel. I look at his channel every now and then and watch the videos. And what I thought I would do is, instead of giving you these old pictures of UFOs that I used to see in books when I was a kid, I'm giving you new stuff. Two of which were sent to me personally. Not by Tyler at Secure Team 10, but from individuals. One guy sent me a video of his doorbell camera or a security camera at his house in the middle of the night. This right here is the Aguadilla Airport in Puerto Rico. This is where our Department of Homeland Insecurity base is. And you have a UFO, there it is, that right now is violating airspace. It is violating United States sovereign airspace, and especially over a Department of Homeland Security airstrip, airport. If you were a pilot flying some sort of plane or even a drone, you're talking federal prison time. Types of charges, just by doing that. Clearly, this is not something made on this earth. It clearly isn't. It doesn't look like one. It doesn't act like one. You will see it go into the water without making a splash. It will appear back out of the water. And all the time, whether it's above the water, in the water, or coming back out, it's traveling at the same speed. It is as if the water, and there it is, it's over the ocean now, those are the waves. This is an infrared image of it. So apparently, the machine itself, it just went in the water now. And now it comes back out. It's going to split in two here in a minute. But the object itself is probably very cold relative to everything else in its environment. And now they've lost track of it. You're going to see it pop up here any second again. There it is. And it's going to split in two. There it goes. Now, how is that possible? How is that even feasible that that happens? Going into the water without, you know, a bullet. If you shoot a bullet into a swimming pool, at best, that bullet is going to travel maybe a foot in the water before it stops its motion. It just can't do it. These are pictures from a United States nuclear submarine several years ago, taken by the captain from his telescope that he's looking through. And he sees this triangular-shaped UFO coming up out of the water. Has no idea what it is, who it belongs. This is the security camera I was talking to you about. Watch the upper right-hand corner. In fact, you can see it now coming through the trees. Then it's going to change directions. Huge, bright light that is traveling at a fairly high rate of speed and just makes a turn. I'm going to replay this video. And then what I did is I did a close-up of it so you can see it better. Watch for it again. Here it comes through the trees. And There it comes out over the top of the trees. It's going to change course, start flying in a different direction than it was going, and it seems to be going pretty fast. Now, I'm going to play it again for you twice. You're going to see a close-up. I zoomed in on that particular corner. There it goes. Those are not typical airplane collision lights or landing lights. That's not a helicopter. That's not a drone. It's too big for a drone. It's a pretty good size. I would say, if I were to guess, at that distance, I would say probably that thing is maybe 30 feet in diameter. Maybe something like that. Maybe 40, maybe bigger. I don't know. It may be farther away than I think. But clearly a saucer-shaped object, fully lit, that's flying through the air at a pretty substantial rate of speed. That was sent in to me by one of our listeners. He said, "Pastor, you can use this however you want to." And I'm going, "Yes! Here's another one. Look at these lights coming off of this thing. There is a rectangular one. Here is your classic saucer-shaped thing. This one here, you can just now see it right there. They're going to do a close-up on it. 1, 2, 3, 4 small orbs and a larger orb. And it looks like they're like chained together or linked together somehow, some way. It is clear that they are material objects because they're reflecting the light that's coming up from the surface of the earth. So this is a solid object. Now, does that in any way take away from the fact, I believe, and I think the Bible bears this out, the fact that this also exists in the fourth dimension. Here's one of those flying triangles right there. That also has been seen multiple places, pictures taken of it. There it is again. Another zoomed in, sort of slowed down image of what they call a TR-3B. Here's another one. Let's see what this one is. I don't remember. I think this also is sort of a triangular-shaped object. This one here, look at the weirdness of it. Here you have two more triangles. And they seem to be linked together in some way, although it's not really made clear. There's a repeat of that same one. You're seeing that they look almost identical. There is going to be a picture come up here that was given to me. This one right here. In fact, I want to stop the video for a second. This one right here, a pastor friend of mine, in fact, I'll give you his name, Pastor Wayne Dinwiddie, who pastors a church not too far from Lake of the Ozarks. Lake of the Ozarks is a big man-made lake. It's a very popular place. A lot of people have cabins there. There's one area of it they call Party Cove. If you want to see drunks on boats taking their clothes off, you go to Party Cove in Lake of the Ozarks. I've never been there, but I've heard the stories. Okay. But anyway, this pastor showed me this picture. And it's from his cousin. So this picture doesn't just show up on the internet as, boy, look at this. Here's a UFO, only to find out that it was Photoshopped somehow. But when they took the picture, they didn't see this object. They didn't see it. They were just out visiting Colorado, taking a picture of the mountains, how pretty they are. Lisa and I are going to go do that this year. The Mutual UFO Network Conference is in Denver, Colorado this year. We have already filled out the paperwork to get a booth. We're going to do the same thing that we did last year. We're going to give out our DVDs that are related to UFOs. I might even throw this one in. And we'll see what God does. Last year, I was interviewed by a German reporter who did a really good article about what I believe and why is this Protestant, you know, priest, he used to be a Catholic, why is this Protestant minister at a UFO conference? And so he wrote the article, and now I have a Zoom call scheduled with somebody with a production company that is going to do they're doing the research now and putting together the information that they want to make into a multi-part documentary series. Now, I don't know where it's going to be seen. I don't know if it's going to be on broadcast television. I don't know if it's going to be like on Netflix or anything like that. I don't know anything beyond that. But we've already set up a Zoom call for a week from tomorrow. And they'll be interviewing me, so just sort of kind of get a feel from what I believe and whether I can articulate it well enough to be in a documentary and so on. And what was interesting to me is that this production company is doing all this research on UFOs. And they said, we didn't have a clue of the possibility of UFOs being related to what they called the divine. In other words, God. And I'm going, well, that's the only way they could be. There is always a relationship to God somehow, some way. If they exist, and I believe they do, and I'm going to zoom in on this picture in a minute. If they exist, then God created them. For without him was not anything made that was made. Some people give the devil too much credit. I do not see where the devil has the ability to create something. And what I mean by that is take nothing and turn it into something. God has that ability. And God said, let there be light. And he created the most basic form of energy in the universe. And that is light. And he created it out of nothing. He spoke his word and it happened. That's our God. So I don't believe the devil created aliens. I don't believe he created their ships. I believe these things were made by God with an intention in mind, with a plan. God has a plan. He reveals to us his plan in the scriptures. And there's where we're going to get our facts from. So let's just say that you believe that every UFO video and every UFO photograph is fake. Let's just say that you believe that it's fake. The Bible then can change your mind if you'll believe it. If you'll believe literally what the Bible says, and you're open to letting God change you, then I believe, even if you've never seen one and you think that all videos and photos are fabrications and they're not real, if you'll read the scriptures and believe it, I think God will show you just how real they are. Now, I said this at the conference in Indiana. I said, whether or not you believe or don't believe in UFOs is completely irrelevant. If you don't believe in unidentified flying objects coming from the heavens somewhere, coming down to this earth, landing, little beings coming out of it, people describe seeing lizard men, which are dragons. If you don't believe that, it's irrelevant, because they exist and their existence does not require your belief in it. But I'll say this. I believe there's coming a day when everybody is going to believe. Now, here's a zoom in of the picture. Now, there's something right here. You see it? Let me get it closer than that. Wait for it. Wait, there it is. Do you see that? You see the lights and the shape that it makes. And I want you to notice that this thing, this object, obviously exists in our three-dimensional world because it has substance and mass to it, because as it lifted up from the cloud that it was hiding behind, it pulled the cloud up with it. Do you see that? That's not exhaust from the motors on the UFO. It was hiding in these clouds. Let me back up. It was here in these clouds. And now I want you to look at how big that thing is. See that mountain over there? Yeah. One of these days I'm going to climb that mountain. This thing is huge. And it exists, I believe, both in the spiritual realm and the physical three-dimensional world that we live in. Both of them. I mean, after all, when the two angels accompanied the Lord to go see Abraham by this time, they go see Abraham. Abraham immediately calls for water and he washes their feet. Now, the water didn't just pour through their silhouetted ghost-like feet. Abraham was able to touch their feet while he washed their feet. See what I'm saying? That even though these angels are from the spiritual realm, fourth dimension, a higher dimension, even though they're from that, in this three-dimensional world, they literally, you cannot tell them apart from other men. And what the Bible calls them in Genesis 18 is men. It then calls them, in Genesis 19, calls them angels. But it's the same two men. They had their feet washed. They sat down. They ate a wonderful meal. And then they went on their way and got to Sodom, and Lot's inviting them to eat again. Come on in. We got food here. You need to. You look starved. Do they not feed you in heaven or what? Yeah, we eat manna every day. That's not a joke either. Manna is, the Bible says, is the food of angels. But I want you to look at how big that is. How real it is. When you see the lights, you see the circular shape of it. You see the fact that as it rose through that cloud, it pulled the cloud up underneath it. And so I have two pieces of evidence that I know where they came from. I do not see any sign. Let me go back and see if I can find the guy's security camera. Yeah, here it is. I don't see any evidence of After Effects or special computer effects in this video. I don't see any evidence of it. You know, computer graphics are pretty good, but they're not perfect. And especially if you're not someone who is very, very well trained in putting things in videos or taking things out of videos, somebody can always tell the difference. And I don't see any evidence of trickery in this video, nor do I see it in that photograph. I'll let that play again. Now, while that's playing, I'm going to go through some scriptures here, and let's see. I'm going to let that video run out. I think I might have a little bit more to show you on this. But as far as I can tell, these videos and photographs that I showed you, I believe are genuine. All right. So what does that mean then? How do we reconcile this? How do we understand this? Let me go back to the beginning here. The chariots of God are 20,000, even thousands, which that phrase means there are 20,000 and thousands more of these chariots. Now I think I've talked about this before. The fact that they're 20,000, to me, it tells me that 20,000 is based on the number two. And the number two is a number that points to the time of the Gentiles. 2 days. A day with the Lord is as 1,000 years. So since Christ died, we have the church, and you know, the day of Pentecost, the church has been in existence for nearly 2 days or 2,000 years. Remember that when Joshua was going to lead Israelites in the promised land, and the Ark of the Covenant was to go first, and they were going to cross Jordan, and Joshua told them, when you see the Ark of the Covenant go by, you're going to follow it, but you're going to be 2,000 cubits behind it. And that, when I read that, I went, oh, there it is. Here is the Ark of the Covenant, which is Christ. He is the merciful God. He is the mercy seat. And he has the law inside of him. Okay? So here's Christ coming, his first coming, going into the promised land, but Israel has to come 2,000 cubits behind them, or 2,000 years behind him. So this idea that David wrote the chariots of God are 20,000, even thousands of angels, he could have said the chariots of God are thousands upon thousands. But he specifically gave a number, 20,000, which is based on two, which I believe that those chariots are reserved for us. It's like getting to go to your senior high school graduation in a limousine. Okay? You are hot snot, man. When we graduate, Jesus said he would send forth his angels and gather together the elect, which is us. We are the elect of God. We've been elected by God. And I believe, just like with Elijah, who was carried up into heaven in a chariot by a whirlwind, I think that is a very important picture of what our rapture is going to look like, how it's going to take place. And notice that these chariots themselves are living creatures. They're angels. They are alive. Let's see here. Let me go back to that. So that, this chariot is alive. It's alive. I would say inanimate objects. And what I mean by that is objects that we would look at and say, like this toy car. Well, we know it's just a toy car, so it doesn't have a motor in it, so it wouldn't run by itself. But if this were a heavenly car, it would be alive. Okay? It would be a living creature made by God himself. So, meanwhile, back at the ranch, these angels of God are chariots, and the Lord is among them. Remember Ezekiel 1, there is a chariot that came forth. I looked, and behold, a whirlwind came out of the north. Now that whirlwind, do you remember what took Elijah into heaven? He was riding in the chariot, but it was the whirlwind that lifted him up into heaven. Now, a whirlwind is an energy vortex. Sort of, well, how can I describe it? I'm not sure I can. But it is some kind of energy vortex. Did you know that in the Hindu religion, they speak of these seven chakras that are in your body that need to be awakened because they're dead asleep. And these chakras, according to the Hindu religion, are energy wheels. Think about it. They are energy wheels spinning in a vortex. Those are basically devils. You remember what Mary Magdalene was before Jesus healed her? A lot of people say, yeah, she was the harlot. No, Bible didn't say that. The Bible says that Mary Magdalene was delivered from being possessed by seven devils. And when I read that, I went, that's the seven chakras of Hinduism. Seven devils. So anyway, this whirlwind is going to play into what I'm doing is, I've taught on UFOs and that they are these chariots. And I've mentioned in passing about all these stories in the Bible where chariots show up. I'm going to read some of those to you today. We're going to see the typology of them. So behold, a whirlwind came out of the north, a great cloud and a fire enfolding itself, and a brightness was about it. And out of the midst thereof, as the color of amber, out of the midst of the fire, also out of the midst thereof came the likeness of four living creatures. And this was their appearance. They had the likeness of a man. So the number four here tells you that they are of the spiritual realm. Principalities, powers, rulers of darkness, spiritual wickedness, high places. But these are good angels. These are God's good, holy angels. They do what God tells them to do. They've not rebelled against God. They're not disobedient. They don't lie. Okay? And they don't sleep with human women or men. So, in verse 13, as for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire. Boy, where was that one? That's Aguadilla. Right. Hang on. There was one that looked just like burning coals of fire. This one. Look at that. Da, 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 da. Anyway, and like the appearance of lamps, it went up and down among the living creatures, and the fire was bright, and out of the fire went forth lightning. The living creatures ran and returned as the appearance of a flash of lightning. You're going to see that again, too. Now, as I beheld the living creatures, behold one wheel upon the earth by the living creatures with his four faces. The appearance of the wheels and their work was like unto the color of a beryl, and they four had one likeness, and their appearance and their work was as it were a wheel in the middle of a wheel. When they went upon their four sides, and they returned not when, and they turned not when they went. As for their rings, they were so high that they were dreadful, and their rings were full of eyes round about them four. Let's go back to this. A wheel full of eyes. So now in Nahum chapter 2, verse 4, Nahum prophesied that the chariots shall rage in the streets. They shall jostle one against another in the broad ways. They shall seem like torches, and they shall run like the lightnings. Back up here. In Ezekiel, They ran and returned. Verse 14, the living creatures ran and returned as the appearance of a flash of lightning. So down here in Nahum chapter 2, we're not just talking about, you know, four-wheeled, horse-drawn chariots. I remember years ago somebody showing me that verse and saying that it referred to cars nowadays. But when I look at everything that it says about these chariots, is that they seem like torches, which means they were completely lit up. Just like the one we saw in the security camera outside this guy's house, 3 o'clock in the morning, something like that. They glowed like torches and they ran like lightnings. In other words, they were extremely fast. They neither accelerated nor decelerated to stop. They went and returned. No acceleration. No change it. Nothing like that. Boom, boom. Nahum was predicting of a time when these chariots would be seen and they will jostle one against another and they will look like torches and they'll run like the lightnings. I think God knows what he's talking about here. Zechariah chapter 6. Here's how we know. Here's how we know that they're spirits. And I turned and lifted up mine eyes and looked, and behold, there came four chariots out from between two mountains. And the mountains were mountains of brass. In the first chariot were red horses. And in the second chariot, black horses. In the third chariot, white horses. And in the fourth chariot, grizzled and bay horses. Then I answered and said unto, and if I remember right, the grizzled and bay meant that they were sort of a grayish green in color with blotches on them. Then I answered and said unto the angel that, and do you recognize these four colors? I don't have it in my notes, but let's look at it. Revelation chapter 1, or excuse me, chapter 6. We have the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Oh, good. A telemarketer is calling me. We have the white horse, we have a red horse, we have a black horse, and then we have the pale horse. Remember what I've said, that whenever you have four things, one of them is going to be different than the other three. In this case, you have one rider for each horse. In the fourth horse, which is a pale horse, you have two riders, death and hell. And it's the same thing with these horses and chariots. You have white, you have red, you have black. But then the fourth horse takes on like a two-tone. It's grizzled and bay. It's different. It's not a solid color like the other three. It's just like the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But John is different. In my DNA, the adenine, guanine, cytosine, they are the same because they all appear in RNA, single strand. But thymine's different. Thymine is not present in RNA. Uracil is. But when RNA is joined or built into DNA, uracil is taken out and thymine is put in its place. just, it's a pattern of God. And so he says in verse 4, then I answered and said unto the angel that talked with me, what are these, my Lord? And the angel answered and said unto me, these are the four spirits of the heavens, which go forth from standing before the Lord of all the earth. So you've got the Old Testament, which is your left eye looking at something, the New Testament, which is your right eye looking at the same thing, and you're to take both of those and put them together. Seek ye out the book of the Lord and read. No one of these shall fail, and none shall want her mate. And I believe Zechariah 6 is mated to Revelation 6. And the appearance of these four horses, in the case of what Zechariah saw, he also was allowed to see that there were chariots on them. Chariots of fire and horses of fire. They are spirits. Now, this is 1 Kings chapter 7. This is how Solomon built the platform that the Ark of the Covenant was going to sit on. He basically made what Ezekiel saw in Ezekiel 1. He made a chariot. In verse 23 of chapter 7, he made a molten sea, 10 cubits from the one brim to the other. It was round all about, and his height, it was round. Disc-shaped. And his height was 5 cubits, and a line of 30 cubits did compass it round about. So it's circumference was 30 cubits. It was 5 cubits off the floor. Then in verse 32, and under the borders were four wheels, and the axle trees of the wheels were joined to the base. The height of a wheel was a cubit and a half cubit, and the work of the wheels was like the work of a chariot wheel. They're, count these, their axle trees, their naves, their fellows, and their spokes were all molten. How many parts to these wheels? 1, 2, 3, 4. This is not a Tesla automobile. This is the chariot of God that Ezekiel saw. Because in Ezekiel 1, you get down to the very end of it. Ezekiel says, in verse 26, and above the firmament that was over their heads was the likeness of a throne. That's what the mercy seat is, the Ark of the Covenant, it's the throne. The likeness of a throne, as the appearance of a sapphire stone, and upon the likeness of the throne was a likeness as the appearance of a man above upon it. Who was that man? That man had the glory of the Lord over him, a rainbow, just like Jesus. All right, so this is the Son of Man sitting on the throne of God. You think the devil would like to have God's chariot? Yep. Now, 2 Kings 2:11, and it came to pass as they still went on and talked. This is Elijah. Behold, there appeared a chariot of fire and horses of fire, and parted them both asunder. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. The chariot being made of fire, the horses being made of fire, indicates to you that the both the chariot and the horses were an angel. The Bible says that he has made his spirits a flaming fire. In other words, we're made out of carbon and dirt, dust. Those in the spiritual realm are made out of energy. And in this case, light energy, which is usually manifested as a fire. Even when you turn a light bulb on, the filament in that bulb is receiving the electrical current, and it's causing the filament to burn, but because there's no air inside the light bulb, it doesn't have oxygen to burn, so it doesn't burn up. But it's still fire nonetheless. When you touch a light bulb after it's been on, is it hot? Yep. So it's energy in the form of heat and light, which is fire. Okay? Now, and this, remember, this is typology. This is a story of how things are going to happen in the last days. And I like this story. It's one of my favorites, because generally, I'm like the rest of you. If the Lord doesn't come and get us right away, then we are going to go through some form of trouble. Guarantee you. Now, I'm very respectful of those who believe in what's called a pre-tribulational rapture. I'm not your enemy. I'm not here to tell you how wrong and stupid you are. Nothing like that. I hope you're right. I do. Because it fills me with fear to think of what could happen if a time of great trouble came to this earth and we were not taken home out of it. That would mean that we are going to be persecuted. But would we be the first? No. There are people in this world today that are being killed because they're Christians. So, 2 Kings 6, when the servant of the man of God was risen early and gone forth, behold, an host compassed the city both with horses and chariots. Now, in this story, the horses and chariots are of the physical realm. But remember, this is typology. So let's take this story and let's advance it into the future days. Is there an army of any nation whatsoever that still fights wars with horse-drawn chariots? No, there isn't one. And if there was, they could be easily defeated. I mean, if your country, like say the United States, we've got tanks, we've got jets, bombers, we've got armored personnel carriers, we've got guns, we've got everything. And if an army of soldiers riding in a chariot pulled by a team of horses with spears and swords in their hands said, "We're going to conquer you," we just fly over them and drop a bomb on them and blow them up. I do believe that we are going to be surrounded one of these days with horses and chariots, but they're not from this world. See what I'm getting at? So Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, woke up. And saw around the city, they were surrounded by horses and chariots. It was an alien invasion. And his servant said unto him, "Alas, my master, how shall we do?" And he answered, "Fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that be with them." And Elisha prayed and said, "Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see." And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man and saw, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha. In other words, if we advance this into the future, there will come a time when, let's say, God's people are surrounded by principalities and powers and rulers of the darkness of this world and spiritual wickedness in high places, and they're going to kill us. But then God opens our eyes and we see that it's not us that's surrounded, it's them. And they're surrounded by an even bigger army of soldiers with horses and chariots and swords. And they are angels, because he giveth his angels charge over us, the Bible says. Isn't that beautiful? Look at this one. He was told the king of Egypt that the people fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and of his servants was turned against the people. And they said, "Why have we done this, that they have let Israel go from serving us?" And he made ready his chariot. See it? And took his people with him. And he took 600 chosen chariots. What number? 600. Which is the base number of the mark of the beast, 600, 666. And the number six tells you a story. In Genesis 6, the sons of God mingled themselves with the seed of men and joined together. Literally, man now is a hybrid race. And now, because the gods have interceded into man's future, mingling his DNA with their DNA, now man, who is stuck down on this planet. You know, we have people up in the space station right now. And even though they exercise every day, still, if they've been up there 6 months, or I think the longest is like 350 some odd days, Story Musgrave and others who have been up there almost a year, they come back down here, they can't walk. I think it was Musgrave who said that for 2 or 3 months, the pain in his body was so intense. It was awful. It took him like a year to get acclimated to this world again. So we weren't designed. Our bodies are not designed to live in outer space yet. All we need is some new DNA to mingle into ours that will make mankind able to live in space, in the heavens. Anyway, 600. So that refers to a hybrid. He took 600 chosen chariots and all the chariots of Egypt and captains over every one of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued after the children of Israel. And the children of Israel went out with a high hand, but the Egyptians pursued after them all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh. Now think of these horses and chariots, of what they are, what they will be in the last days. They will be UFOs, flying chariots. Egyptians pursued after them all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh and his horsemen and his army, and overtook them encamping by the sea beside Pi Hahiroth before Baal Zephon. That story matches that one, 2 Kings 6. You have God's people being threatened by these beings that ride in chariots. So what happens? God said, behold, I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they shall follow them, and I will get me honor upon Pharaoh and upon all his host, upon his chariots and upon his horsemen, and the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord, when I have gotten me honor upon Pharaoh, upon his chariots, and upon his horsemen. Who's going to win this battle? This is better than Star Wars, Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica, all in one. This story's better than any of those. When you understand what these chariots really are. I love it. So in verse 23, the Egyptians pursued and went in after them to the midst of the sea, even all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. And it came to pass that in the morning watch, the Lord looked unto the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and of the cloud, and troubled the host of the Egyptians, and took off their chariot wheels, that they drayed them heavily, so that the Egyptians said, let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fighteth for them against the Egyptians. Now, remember, here's what this is. It's what I believe. I've told you the story the night that it hit me. 1 o'clock in the morning, it dawned on me that Roswell and the idea of a crashed flying disc with three dead alien occupants in it. Before, I had a problem with it. I'm going, if I'm right and they're really angels, angels don't crash. They don't. So what do the wheels do for a chariot? They are the part of the chariot that allows the movement of the chariot. You take the wheels off, and basically, you've got a horse-drawn box, or in this case, a horse-drawn coffin. That's what you have. Man, I love this. Taking the wheels off made them mortal. Just as in Psalm 82, he said, I have said ye are gods, and all of you are children of the Most High, yet ye shall die like men and fall like one of the princes, the principalities. The wheels coming off these chariots is a foreshadow of the fact that when these evil angels come down to the earth, a third of the angelic realm being kicked out of heaven, that when they come down to the earth, God mortalizes them. and they're not, they're going to lose their ability to go back up. That's what I think. In Joshua 11, it came to pass when Jabin, king of Hazor, had heard those things that he sent to Jobab, king of Madon, and to the king of Shimron, and to the king of Achshaph, and to the kings that were on the north of the mountains, and of the plain south of Chinneroth, and in the valley, and in the borders of Dor on the west, and to the... Let's count these. There's a list here. Let's count them. Jabin, king of Hazor, heard these things that he sent to Jobab, king of Madon, to the king of Shimron, to the king of Achshaph, to the kings that were on the north of the mountains, and of the plains south of Chinneroth, and in the valley, and in the borders of Dor on the west, and to the Canaanite on the east and on the west, and the Amorite, that's 10, and the Hittite 11, and the Perizzite 12, and the Jebusite 13 in the mountains, and to the Hivite 14 under Hermon in the land of Mizpah. 14, if I counted right, 7 times 2. And they went out, they and all their hosts with them, much people, even as the sand that is upon the seashore in the multitude, with horses and chariots, very many. And when all these kings were met together, they came and pitched together at the waters of Merom to fight against Israel. And let me ask you this question. What little you know about UFOs and aliens, is there more than one kind of alien? Yeah, I taught about it. You have the Draconians, which are dragons. You have the, what else did I talk about? You have the Nordic ones, which are the fair-skinned, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, the Aryan race that Hitler wanted. You have them. What else have I taught on? I haven't taught on the Greys yet. The Greys are the Archons. In the Gnostic texts, they describe a group of supernatural beings that influence the history of man, cause men to do things. In one of the Gnostic texts, it describes these archons as having small, minuscule bodies with large heads, that they look like a fetus. I'm not kidding you. That he was describing the gray aliens. And the word archon is a Greek word. Guess what it means? Principality. So here you have all these different alien races. Verse 4, and they went out, and they and all their hosts with them, much people, even as the sand that is upon the seashore, and multitude with horses and chariots, very many. And when all these kings were met together, they came and pitched together at the waters of Merom to fight against Israel. And the Lord said unto Joshua, be not afraid because of them, for tomorrow about this time will I deliver them upon all slain before Israel. Thou shalt hawk their horses and burn their chariots with fire. There it is again. Just like the wheels coming off of the chariots of the armies of Pharaoh, Joshua and his men are going to go out and they're going to cut, when to hawk a horse is to cut his hamstring so he can't walk. They're not going to kill the horses. They're just going to cut their hamstring, that big tendon like you have in the back of your ankle. They're going to cut those, and they're going to burn all their chariots with fire. Now, how big and bad is this alien army? Well, they're nothing now. Do you see this? Joshua 17. Yet it came to pass when the children of Israel were waxing strong that they put the Canaanites to tribute, but did not utterly drive them out. And the children of Joseph spake unto Joshua, saying, Why hast thou given me but one lot and one portion to inherit, seeing I am a great people, for as much as the Lord hath blessed me hitherto? Joshua answered them, If thou be a great people, then get thee up to the wood country, and cut down for thyself there in the land of the Perizzites and of the giants, if Mount Ephraim be too narrow for thee. And the children of Joseph said, The hill is not enough for us, and all the Canaanites that dwell in the land of the valley have chariots of what? Iron. This is your iron kingdom. The chariots of iron, both they who are of Beth Shean and her towns, and they who are of the valley of Jezreel. And Joshua spake unto the house of Joseph, even to Ephraim and to Manasseh, saying, Thou art a great people, and hast great power. People, that's us. Greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. Thou shalt not have one lot only, but the mountain shall be thine, for it is a wood, and thou shalt cut it down, and the outgoings of it shall be thine, for thou shalt drive out the Canaanites, though they have iron chariots, and though they be strong. Oh, I love this. Do you? This is the Iron Kingdom that comes with great iron chariots. And yet, Manasseh and Ephraim destroy them. God gives them the power to do it. He's going to give it to us too, when the time is right. Judges 4. The children of Israel cried unto the Lord, for he had 900 chariots of iron. This is the fourth kingdom, people. The fourth kingdom. In 20 years, he mightily oppressed the children of Israel. And Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth, she judged Israel at that time. And she dwelt under the palm tree of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in Mount Ephraim. And the children of Israel came up to her for judgment. And she sent and called Barack Obama, the son of... Barak, the son of Abinoam, out of Kedesh Naphtali, and said unto him, Hath not the Lord God of Israel commanded, saying, Go and draw toward Mount Tabor, and take with thee 10,000 men of... You know who that 10,000 men are? The Lord cometh with 10,000s of his saints. That's us. We're the 10,000 men that God is going to give authority to for the 1,000-year reign. 1,000 is 10 times 10 times 10. And he said, I will draw unto thee to the river Kishon, Sisera, the captain of Jabin's army, with his chariots and his multitude, and I will deliver him into thine hand. People, this alien army that I absolutely believe is coming, don't be afraid of them. Yeah, they're going to do great signs and wonders. They're going to have a lot of power. But God said, don't be afraid of them. You're going to end up being their judge to either have mercy upon them or bring destruction to them. It'll probably be destruction. So in verse 12, and they showed Sisera that Barak, the son of Abinoam, was gone up to Mount Tabor, and Sisera gathered together all of his chariots, even 900 chariots of iron, there it is, and all the people that were with him from Harosheth of the Gentiles unto the river Kishon. And Deborah said unto Barak, Up, for this is the day in which the Lord hath delivered Sisera into thine hand. Is not the Lord gone out before thee? So Barak went down from the Mount Tabor and 10,000 men after him. He went down from the mountain. Anytime somebody comes down from a mountain, they're coming from heaven. And we come down with him. The Lord cometh with 10,000s of his saints. And the Lord discomfited Sisera and all his chariots and all his hosts with the edge of the sword before Barak, so that Sisera lighted down off his chariot and fled away on his feet. But Barak pursued after the chariots and after the hosts, and unto Harosheth of the Gentiles, and of all the host of Sisera fell upon the edge of the sword, and there was not a man left. When God gets ready, every one of them are going to be slain. Every one of them. We won't have to worry about them anymore. 1 Samuel 8. This is Samuel describing the king that's going to reign over them. Did you know there were 42 kings of all of Israel and the divided kingdom of Israel? 42 kings. How long does the beast continue? 42 months. So Samuel said, this will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them for himself, for his chariots, to be his horsemen, and some shall run before his chariots. And he will appoint him captains over thousands and captains over fifties, and will set them to ear his ground and to reap his harvest and to make his instruments of war and instruments of his chariots. Let me ask you a question. Do you really believe that factions of our military are working on recovered, crashed chariots in order to reverse engineer them so that we could have them to fight wars with? Yes, I believe it. I believe it. And when you see that verse now, God said, the king that you're going to get, he's going to have you making his instruments of war and his chariots. People, there is so much in that Bible that we haven't even just scratched the surface of the surface of the depth of the Word of God. Study it. Read it. Think it. Okay? Pray for us. Pray for our ministry. Pray for our church. We love you. You are the reason why we do what we do here at Bethel. God bless you. We'll see you Sunday.